Hey, I'm here with Martin Thomas. It's me, Chris Cox.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you were Cyrus on this one.
No. Who's Cyrus? Oh, my driver?
Your driver.
Yeah. I forget his name. You know, the little people.
So, what's up, Chris?
Oh, man, it's day three of Fantastic Fest.
Is it day three?
Isn't it day three?
Okay.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It is Saturday, right?
Well, technically it's Sunday now.
Okay.
Okay, it's the end of day three.
Sunday doesn't count until they've actually shown a movie that's listed as playing on Sunday.
Fair enough.
All right, fair enough. But we've both been here for the whole time. Man, I've seen you a lot more than I thought I would. I'm so happy about that.
I'm happy about that, too. It's like I've seen you more here than we have lately.
True.
During the week. It's been fun. You know what? When I come to these things, like, you know, I'm kind of looking around. I see people I know. But when I see you, I go like, okay, good. My buddy's here. Everything's going
to
be all right.
There's somebody I can talk to. Yeah. On the same page. Yeah, agreed.
Somebody who's not going to ditch me to talk to somebody else who's more famous than me.
No, I am. You know me better than that.
Yes.
Well, let me tell you, ask you this. We haven't talked to you on mic at all.
Oh, it's true.
What's the best thing you've seen so far?
Well, had you talked to me on the first day, because I watched it online, it would have been Cheap Thrills, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Right up my alley, you saw it at South by Southwest. You were so right, Pagan, that I would love that movie.
Well, say a little bit about what Cheap Thrills is about.
Well, Cheap Thrills, it's a dark comedy, heavy on the dark, more like a situation, where you got your main guy, who, you know, he's broke, he's got a wife, a new baby, about to be, what's the word, evicted from his apartment, loses his job.
Ethan Embry, right?
No.
Well, that's the other guy.
It's Pat Healy.
Right, Pat Healy.
I got to meet him yesterday or the day before. It was pretty cool. But he's just a guy, and he goes to a bar, his last thing, he barely has any money, and he runs into an old friend he hasn't seen in years, an old childhood friend, who's doing a little bit better, but he's a leg breaker.
That's Ethan Embry.
Yes, Ethan Embry. And they're just kind of hanging out and probably aren't going to make a long night of it, kind of crying in their beers. And they run into David Koechner and Sarah Paxton, his hot, sexy wife. And they're just out for a good time for her birthday. David Koechner, who you've seen in plenty of things before, he had a recurring role on The Office as Michael Scott's obnoxious friend. But this is a guy with tons of money, tons of cocaine, and just loves to bet on things. And gets these two guys in a war of bets, like, hey, I bet you won't say something to that waitress, make her slap you. Ooh, here's $500. Okay, now I bet you won't do this. To where these guys are competing with each other to do the most darkest, heinous shit just to win more money. I love that film.
With such an undercurrent in it of, like, I mean, it's not even an undercurrent, it's right there at the surface, but the so-called subtext of, like, this is what the rich are doing to the middle class and below.
Sure.
And yet, you could totally ignore all that if you wanted to,
uh-huh.
And just enjoy it as a really fun, disturbing film.
All like, hey, how far are you willing to go?
I mean, it's funny. It's really funny. And you'll get sick at yourself for laughing at it.
Yes, and it will take you to a place of much discomfort. And you'll follow it there. And at this point, when you're debating, do I want to turn this off because I don't like being here? You're not going to.
No.
You can't help but follow it all the way.
You've got to see where that ends up.
You know what? Something they do in there is, like, they take something that you're afraid they're going to do, and they say, like, no, that's not going to happen. So you go, like, oh, okay, well, if that's off the table, I guess it can't get too much worse. Yeah, well, just watch it and see.
Now, you said that's the movie that before all this you would have said your favorite, but it sounds like there's something else you like better now.
Well, there's something that I would say right now is a tie. It's so close.
I've got to hear what it is. I'm curious.
Well, I mentioned this to you about it before. It's a movie called Fake.
That's the one that's number... Oh, wow, okay. I didn't realize it was quite that level.
It really was. It was something that I wasn't... I was had an interest in, and I... But I was like, well, I'm going to go see Grand Piano, one of the big movies here, starring Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
It was one of the red carpet movies. But there was a press screening for that later, and there was some trouble getting me in, some difficulty. I was like, you know what? I'll go ahead and see Fake. I can watch this other movie later. And it's a Korean movie, an animated Korean movie.
No, right?
Yeah. It's right before this, I'd say, okay, I won't see Korean movies because they always manage to stick rape in there somewhere. And this one doesn't. But it's a Korean movie about this small village where this basically swindler preacher comes in with his whole faith healing and congregation and just wants to rip them off. And the main character is probably the biggest asshole you've ever seen in a movie ever. But he's sort of the hero of the film who's trying to tell everybody, no, this guy, I don't fucking trust him. But who wants to follow this guy? Because everybody hates him, and with good reason. I was totally wrapped up in it. I mean, not just by the animation, which the drawing is great in it, but it had such great writing and acting all the way through, and it takes you on such a journey. And I don't know what to tell you about the end. I don't want to say anything about it.
Yeah, please don't, because from what you came out of it saying, you're going to love this movie.
I think you really would. I mean, I can't say you'd love it as much as I would, but I would really like petition you to see it.
I think it was our friend Antonio who came out saying exactly the same thing to me. Oh, Chris, you need to see this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But those have been by far my two favorite things here.
I still can't nail down like a list, but I can say as of how I'm feeling right now, I just saw Jodorowsky's Dune, which was the story of the crazy director Alejandro Jodorowsky. Yeah. One of my personal favorites. There's not a lot of guys who just do pure surrealism that I really still feel like I get enough that I really enjoy their stuff, and Jodorowsky's one of those for me. And he was going to make his own version of Dune in like 1974, 1975, Frank Herbert's Dune, and it never happened, obviously, because we'd all know it.
Right, right.
But it was going to have a soundtrack by Pink Floyd. Salvador Dali was going
to
be there.
That's what's so crazy about it, like the caliber of talent he was pulling together to make this thing.
Oh, it, like this incredible list of people and creators.
H.R. Giger doing design.
Dan O'Bannon.
Chris Foss, who's a famous sci-fi painter.
Mobius. Yeah. It's just like this bizarre collection of, like, who was the other main actor? Oh, Orson Welles. Oh. No, I'm sorry, Orson Welles was playing Baron Mahar Conan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it was also going to star with David Carradine. And Mick Jagger.
Yeah, it was like, oh my God, can you imagine? And this film really puts you in a world in your head that this film got made, like showing you all the storyboards that they've sort of motion comicked the storyboards to give you a better idea. But it's just so well done that it gives you such an, like, wow, I can see this film kind of in my head. And you know it didn't get made when the film finally gets to the point to start talking about, like, look at all the shit that happened right after this project was abandoned and how similar it was and all these things and all these people were involved who did similar things. You're like, the entire face of science fiction film would be so drastically changed right now. I mean, from Star Wars on up.
True.
If this film had actually come out and gotten a lot of distribution.
It's interesting to speculate on what would have happened.
There's no way to know. Maybe it would have. But that's the fantasy the film sells you on.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I got to say, I really thoroughly enjoyed being put, the place that that film put me there to see that. I mean, not that anything's wrong with what we got now. I'm just saying it's so creatively, it shows you a parallel universe to our own in which, you know, that's what it was, where Peter Max rules the earth.
Right. But, you know, I mean, Chris, it's like, it's great as it is to think, like, man, how great would that be? Had he been given carte blanche, it would have been a 12 or 20 hour movie. It's just some of those things where it's like, dude, there's just no way this could have happened.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I know that director well enough to go, how in the fuck would he have ever made a movie that would have played all across America?
Right.
I'm just like, and they were talking to Hollywood studios about that kind of distribution and everything. I'm like, I mean, some directors do that. They start off from crazy beginnings and go on to, like, okay, I get how the system works, so art in the system.
Right, right.
Some people never get it, like David Lynch, who had that lucky moment in the sun and then went back down into his own little field of madness. Right. I don't give a fuck about any of that shit. And Cronenberg goes the way, like, he evolves out of it to, like, I'm a serious Hollywood filmmaker now.
Right, right.
And then goes back to being weird again, but within the system? I don't know what that was.
I know. I know.
It's not working for me.
No. It's like right now, Cronenberg has reached that point where, like a lot of bands I like, they're old, and sometimes seeing a really good cover band is almost better than seeing the actual band.
Yeah.
And Cronenberg is at this point where the guys who imitate him, Or making the movies
doing
we want
a
to see.
Job. Yeah. It's like, hey, Kermit, you know when you were at your best? Long before any of this weird, like, let's work with Robert Pattinson bullshit you're doing.
Like, man, I loved your new film, Splice. That was awesome.
I want him to work with Jason Blum, Blumhouse Productions, who will give you got $5 million.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and we need a horror film.
Right.
Or an action film.
Yeah.
Go. He's the Corman of today.
Right.
Like him or hate him, that's what he is, because his films are overproducing. All right, $5 million in Insidious 2. $41 million opening weekend.
I know.
Holy fuck. But anyway, I've been expanding on that. We digress. All right, so let's move on.
Okay, other films that we
I think
like.
Another film that we saw together we can talk about is Grand Piano.
Okay, yeah.
Which we just saw last night.
Right.
Very, like, seriously? The description is it's like Speed, but on a piano?
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, Elijah Wood is in it.
Yeah.
And John Cusack is in it.
Yeah.
And really unexpectedly, Alex Winter is in it.
Right.
And you're like, okay, well, there's got to be something to this. And fortunately, there was.
It is. It is. It's a fun little movie that's, you know, 90 minutes long. You get in, you get out. And like movies like this, you can't think about the premise of it too much or else it falls apart. But you enjoy it for what it is while it's on. And, you know, it's almost all... The show is almost completely Elijah Wood and John Cusack's voice. And the two of them together, they work.
The premise, as much as I want to explain to you folks out there, is this. Elijah Wood is arguably the greatest pianist in the world, which is hard to believe considering he has little stubby fingers. But never mind that. He is in the terms of the film. The problem is that he hasn't played in, I think they said, 5 years at one point in
the game. Right, it's like he screwed up something, and he's broken his confidence.
Well, his master, who's Patrick something, died like a year beforehand, and he was considered the greatest pianist in the world. And then once he died, everyone's like, well, I guess it's him now.
Right.
His tutor, the guy who he tutored, who he grew up with working. And
his protege.
The problem is that he wrote what they called the Unplayable Symphony, the master, Patrick. And no one had ever been able to play but him. And then his student, Elijah Wood, had a big concert 5 years beforehand, tried to play it, had some sort of massive meltdown in the middle of it. They're never really clear what happened.
Right, right.
But something that was embarrassing.
Yeah.
And, like, was in the regular media. Like, when do you see stories about
a pianist playing the wrong notes and everybody going, like, oh, I don't know.
Oh, God, what a fucking disaster. This is worse than Miley Cyrus. Holy shit.
Right?
But, all right, well, depressed. Something happened that was, I don't know, he broke down crying, started screaming, whatever it was bad.
I will say, and it's unfortunately, it reminded me too much of the character he plays on Wilfred.
I kept thinking that too, actually.
I mean, you know, the whole thing with having the breakdown and all. And
well, he's so nervous.
Yeah.
He's there, and his wife is there, who is a famous Hollywood actress in the context of the film. And everybody knows it, so there's all this media attention. He's there to play for the first time in 5 years. Not that piece, mind you, but just to play.
Yeah.
Or just get back out there. And he's turning the notes of his of the music, and it says, play one wrong note, and I will kill you.
Right.
Which you just go... Because you've already seen people fuck with him. Like, there's a thing on the world... There's a graffiti on the wall saying that he's a failure or something at some point.
Right.
And you're like, wow, what a bag of dicks people work in classical music are. But so he figures that, right? But no, it's made clear very quickly that there's really a guy with a high-powered sniper rifle up there somewhere that says, like, you play one wrong note, I'll kill you. You try to leave or call the cops, I will kill your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you will not have time to do anything about either. All right. Where do you go from there? We can't say a lot more than that.
No,
because part of the pleasure is the implausible but fun discovery of what the reasoning is of why all this is happening.
The movies like that always kill me.
Because
I'm like, man, you're going to get to the reason, and I'm going to say that doesn't really work. But hey, it's like you say, it's fun to get there.
Well, that's the thing, is that it has so much fun along the way to when it finally you know, why are you know, you ask, why would this guy even do this to this guy?
Yeah.
By the time it reveals it, ridiculous as it is, you're ready to just go with it.
Right.
You're like, okay, sure.
I mean, I will say, at least it wasn't the explanation of, Because he's crazy.
Yeah.
That's the one that drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. They had just blown it off with, like, it's just a crazy dude. I would have gone, yeah.
Like fucking, like, I would, my go-to for that is Phone Booth. Where yeah. I'm like, really? We went through all that because he's crazy in some way that you can't explain.
I thought there was, like a lot edited out of that or something, a Phone Booth. I'm not sure. I thought I remembered hearing there was a different reasoning, a more specific reasoning.
I would like that because it was so unspecific as to go, why would this ever happen?
Yeah, but it's not a film you go see a director's cut on a shelf and go, I got to check that out.
Absolutely. A movie I saw the same day that you haven't seen, but
you can read my mind. I was about to segue, so go ahead. Jesus Christ.
As a movie called Affliction. Oh, no, Afflicted. Sorry. And which threw me off because I was like, wait, there was already one of those with Nick Nolte and James Coburn. But anyway. Yeah.
I don't think I saw that one.
But this is a found footage film. And it's in that category of found footage films that I like. Now, every found footage film...
I was going to say, ones that don't exist?
No. found footage films, they all, what thing they have in common is that they have flimsy reasons as to why everything was filmed.
And two, there's always going to be a few moments when you go, who the fuck is holding the camera?
Yeah. So you have to decide before it starts, when it starts, you have to decide, are you going to go with it or not?
Yeah.
Because if you sit there all the time wondering about that,
what's the point of even seeing it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I won't say too much about it because hopefully you'll get a chance to watch it. I think you'll like it. I would just say it's sort of like the movie Chronicle meets The Fly.
Okay, but you got to say at least a little bit about what the plot is. So.
Well, the plot is you have two guys who've grown up together. They've been friends forever, Derek and Cliff. And they're college buddies now. But they want to go on a trip. They want to, like, do some traveling over in Europe. And Cliff is a guy who's, like, always made movies and always had Derek in his movies. He's, like, you know, he shoots stuff all the time. This is the reason why he's filming everything. But they say, like, hey, we're going to take all this trip. We're just going to go on this mad adventure. And we're going to video blog the whole thing and post it online. And come to our site and check out what we're doing. We're going to do everything. And right before they get ready to go, Derek is having issues.
Yeah.
And he's taken to the hospital where they go, you have all these twisted arteries in your brain, and we don't know what's going to happen, but at any time, they could go into full aneurysm. Well, we can't stop you from going on this trip, but you probably shouldn't. And it was up to you. And he's just like, look, I'm going to go. This is what I'm going to do.
If you think you're going to die either way, you're like, might as well.
That's it. Because he doesn't even want to go to hospital. His family's like, you should at least get checked out before you go. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it. And so the two of them set off on their trip. But Derek is not always feeling well. And they make the mistake of being in, I can't remember where it was, I think it was Paris, where they decide, hey, they want to hook him up with some girl, get him laid. And they do, his buddies do, and they go like, okay, now he's taking off with her, we're going to do a Turkish cock block. We're going to, you know, which is to like, when you know your buddy's inside having sex, you bust in and go, ah!
That's called a Turkish cock block?
That's what they called it.
Yeah, I've noticed Corey's been spending a lot of time in Turkey lately.
Well, it's like, you know, Cliff and two of the guys who were there doing filming, and they just all decided to do that. And when they bust in, he's there, laid out, naked and bleeding, and the girl's gone. And there's been a huge bite taken out of him.
Jesus.
And from there, he starts to get sicker until he doesn't. And he just starts to change. I don't want to say anything more about it. Because, like, the less I say, the better it is. But it has all the, up until that point, it has all the trappings of a real reality TV show. Some guys are putting together, the way they edit it and everything. And from there, it just starts going. And you don't know what's going to happen, but you know it's not going to be good.
You are not the only person who's told me they really enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that, to be sure. You know, the weird thing about this fest that drives me crazy is that you watch stuff that might not be quite there yet.
Sure.
It's like part of the way, but it starts inspiring your own ideas for stuff. And
yeah.
You're like, you know what? That just that little element of, if you were to take that element and do that.
Oh, I know.
And then you're like, I can't really pull out my notepad and write that down right now. But by the time the movie's over, you're like, I remember I was thinking something. Cool.
I know it. Yeah. I had this great idea, and now I don't remember what it was.
Damn it. It might be the beer.
I'm not saying
definitively, but all signs point to yes.
I tell you what, one of the things that make this festival endurable is the constant flow of beer, or at least the access to it.
Well, endurable is probably the wrong word, but... One of the reasons that make this fest as great as it is the constant flow.
Okay. I'm sorry. Hey, man, it's late. It's 1 in the morning. Maybe I'm not wording things. It's just, there's times, you know, it's a lot to see every day.
And there's a lot of, like, days you come in like, well, you know what? Drank a lot last night. I'm fine. I'm not going to drink. And that's always when they're like, hey, underneath the tent right in front of the theater, there's some party celebrating something. It's like dollar beers.
Yeah.
You're like, well, come on, that's just God telling me to. I'm sorry.
Right, clearly, it's not up to me anymore.
You're like, you don't believe in God, do you, Chris? Well, you know, when in Rome.
I'm not a fanatic.
Look, I'd feel really dumb afterwards if it turned out there was, I got to heaven. He's like, what the hell, dude? I put out all that beer there for you.
I know. Well, you too good to drink my beer?
I don't know how many times I have to spell it out for you here. The whiskey was on sale. God's work, clearly.
Yes.
But yeah, having a really good time this year, actually. And part of it is that I didn't get to go last year
right.
for the first time since it started. And I didn't realize how much I missed it till I got here again.
Sure.
You know? Plus, two, it's really close to my house this year.
Yeah, lucky you.
Yeah,
it's the other end of the world for me.
Yeah, well, every year you've had it right down the block from your house. So.
I guess.
It's only fair. But I'm thinking that next year we need to film a bumper. We've now got all this video equipment and audio equipment.
I had one in there last year.
Did you?
Yeah. Me and Grant and Allison filmed one, and it played quite a bit.
Damn it! Why is this not on YouTube?
It might be.
Really? Oh, you have to send us a link so we can post it.
That would be terrific. I'll look for it. Yeah, it's got to be on YouTube because he put it there first, I think.
Okay, I was not even aware of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bumper, they do these little bumpers where you can submit bumpers that play before every movie. And I haven't seen the same one twice. So
I haven't either.
So there's a lot of them that get accepted, but still, you play it in front of a kind of eclectic and very cool and somewhat influential crowd. You never know. You did a really great one. Somebody might go, wow, who did that one?
Well, the thing is, like, when you do one and it gets some play and you're at the festival walking around, people are like, hey, I just saw you in the bumper.
Or, you know, just being involved in it. But, you know, I think the problem I have with a lot of the bumpers is they just go for a weirdly elaborate setup for just a gross-out joke.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And yeah, I'm like, I hate those.
I don't see what the point is. Do something more clever than that.
Right. You know? Yeah, I'm the same way. Matter of fact, I was like, why did that get accepted? Like, some of the ones I saw last year, I liked. But the year before, every one of them I saw, I was like, wow, I just got an insult without any comedy or anything interesting whatsoever.
Well, they used to have a theme going where they'd always go, oh, do it like something to do with this. And it was always something really offensive, whatever it was. And I don't think they did that this year.
No, I don't think it was. Wait. Yeah, whatever the topic was last year, it wasn't offensive either.
Okay. I saw one or two that were good. I don't know. Overall, I'm having a good year, but those things make me always go, we've got the equipment already, and we've got really smart people that could probably come up with something better than 99% of what we've seen in those bumpers.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny, from moving, at all this cardboard, you know, like giant cardboard boxes, and they're all flat and sitting against my garage wall. And I'm just like, I mean, the main reason I haven't brought them to the recycling place because I'm lazy, to be fair. But I'm like, you know, I can see a world in which just like, rather than do that, we take them out and we paint them into some sort of weird, let's use it for this set and film something stupid real quick. In fact, Courtney, my girlfriend, and I were talking about the idea after watching the movie The Apple.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't, but you told me about it.
Yeah. Like, really stupid, surreal. It's Zardoz the musical, okay?
Jesus.
Of, like, throwing a party that's the idea. Like, it's a costume party, and everybody has to come dressed, not like a specific character, But, like, the idea of a theme, somebody who might have been in Flash Gordon or Zardoz or The Apple or something like that. Or, or Skateland USA.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sort of sci-fi disco outfits. Barbarella. You know, just make up your own sci-fi disco outfit. And then make up the whole house. You know, like, get a Lycra pyramid and put it in the center of the table and have one of those, like, those ball lights from Spencer's that change colors and stuff underneath it. And that's the snack table, you know? I'm like, well, I kind of want to do that now. I don't even really like most of those movies, but that sounds like a cool party.
it'd be cool to have one room that you decorated that way. Or for a party, if you could turn your house into it temporarily.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just use cardboard boxes. Paint them into, like, spaceship parts and sets around.
Yeah. No, that actually would be cool. You're right.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I don't want to quite get rid of these yet. Or a Fantastic Fest bumper. Just saying.
We'll see. We'll see, Chris. We'll see.
It's a long time between now and next year.
Yeah. We don't want to start filming and find out that, like, oh, that theme doesn't match anything we've done so far.
So do you want to talk about Man of Tai Chi?
I suppose we could.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if we're going to review it on, you know, that other site.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe we will, maybe we won't, but Man of Tai Chi is a Keanu Reeves, I don't know if it's directorial debut. Is it?
I don't know. It's the first time I've heard of him direct anything.
Yeah, I think it is. I'm certain it's his directorial debut as a narrative filmmaker. Or at least more certain, anyway. I probably shouldn't say certain. Since that's not true at all. But I think. And it's... Apparently he's decided, fuck it, I'm just going to China. And now Hong Kong does have one of the biggest film industries in the world.
And then why wouldn't he then?
And he goes over there and they're like, you can do whatever you want.
Yes, Neo. Here are the keys.
Because apparently he's got another one coming out in like a month or two, 47 Ronin, another big budget Chinese action film.
Okay.
But this one he's in charge of, and he plays a piece of shit who's... what did I say earlier? I said he's Neo if he was possessed by Al Pacino's character in The Devil's Advocate.
The Devil's Advocate, right. Yeah, somehow they merge.
And decided that, like, he really loved the movie Mortal Kombat, so he was going to form his own, like, billion-dollar finance fight club.
Yes. Yes, it's a billion-dollar... He does security by day, but he has an underground fight club that he video beams to very rich, ultra-rich, and apparently ultra-bored clientele.
And as we find out early on, like, yeah, it's just fighting for a while, but there's that point that's going to come, because we see this from a previous guy.
Yeah.
Who, like, if you refuse to kill, you will be killed.
You will be killed, yeah.
All right, so we know that going into it. Introducing after that, the innocent Tiger Chen.
Right. Who does Tai Chi.
Tai Chi.
Not even a fighting style.
Peaceful. He does. It's like doing yoga in the park.
Yes. But he's found a way to turn it into a fighting style.
He has anger issues.
He does.
And as we see his master telling him, you know, you're kind of looking at this wrong if you want to beat my ass when we're training, basically. I think you're coming at this from the whole wrong thing. But Tiger has been secretly going to
tournaments,
which you're not supposed to do, and everyone's like, Tai Chi. Whatever.
You're gonna stretch.
And then he proceeds to beat the living shit out of anybody who's in the thing. Like, Tai Chi, okay. But Keanu Reeves' character sees this because he watches every television channel in the world.
Looking for a fighter. I gotta have the best fighters.
And so he says, I've got to get him.
Yeah,
and they
just
go,
like that.
And they go get him. And like, he's like, oh, I don't fight for Tai Chi, I'm sorry. And of course, you know when something goes wrong in his life at that point. Like, this is going to cost a lot of money to fix. You know who did that shit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's not a spoiler to say. You know, he just doesn't know.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you don't want to fight for money? Okay, well, here's my card. If things don't work out for you, then call me. All right, boys, go destroy his dojo and make sure he loses his job.
3 hours later. Wow, that's a weird coincidence. I'm so lucky I got offered this job. So, of course, he starts fighting for this guy, and as it goes along, it's that the brunt of the movie is the salvation of a soul. Is this guy going to turn to the dark side and really do what this instincts inside him, this part of him is screaming at him to do? He's clearly a killer on some level. But as his master keeps pointing out, you always have a choice. You know?
Right, right.
Is he going to be a killer? Is he going to turn totally this and turn Tai Chi to be a murderer and a bad guy? Or will we finally see the error of his ways and turn around and use his power for good?
And will the lone cop who's been trying to bust Keanu Reeves forever, will she succeed in doing that?
Will she, in fact, at any point of this movie, given anything to do that's mildly competent?
The thing about this movie is, yeah, it's a lot of ridiculous things as far as the setup and how Keanu has cameras everywhere. And yeah. You have characters who seem like they're from a different movie, like the guy who's the announcer.
Yeah.
Although he was funny. But, like, there's a lot of this movie that's funny because it wants to be, or funny unintentionally. And more unintentional. However, I really like the fighting in it.
The fighting was well done. It wasn't going much for the, in terms of, all right, so I will say this, the set design, the mise-en-scene, if it were, as it were, is gorgeous.
Yes.
Like, wow, what an eye they had for setting up these incredible, beautiful-looking sets for them to fight in.
Right, right.
But the actual cinematography and the direction of the fights is just, it's utilitarian. Which is often good in a martial arts film. You just want to see them fight and feel like you're, you know, like it hurt.
Yeah, and,
you know,
and not like, there's so many movies that we see and we complain about the fact that you get to the fights and they're filmed up so close up that you can't tell what's going on.
Yeah.
And these don't do that. Matter of fact, you can, not only can you see what's going on, but the camera's constantly moving, circling around them as it's happening.
And even with moments that you can't help but suspect they added some amount of wire work.
Sure.
You're never sure that they did, because it's filmed convincingly that you're like, it just looks badass.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I mean, you watch a lot of these films, so for you, you may see this and go like, yeah, it's all right, it's nothing special. I don't, so for me, it's like, oh, this is really a treat.
No, it was mainly the utilitarian part of it that I appreciated. These guys, this guy and everybody they put him up against are really talented fighters, clearly. And they have a kind of unique style. Tai Chi, you will see in some movies, this isn't, as much as this movie tries to sell you, like, oh, you'll never see Tai Chi for, like, Jet Li's been doing that shit since the 80s, okay? I'm just saying, this is not a first-time thing. But, you know, whatever, it's still a cool style to see in that, because it's very, lots of gesticulation, lots of those, like, people making the, what's the name of the symbol, the black and white symbol?
The yin and yang.
It's like people doing basically the yin-yang symbol in the air right before they beat the living shit out of you.
Right.
But I kept watching it thinking how much better this would be if they had handed it over to Stephen Chow, who did like Kung Fu Hustle and Shaolin Soccer, and said, you know what, amp up the comedy, give the martial arts more style, because this film constantly hangs on the precipice of being a satire of itself.
But not quite. You know what, the only thing that makes me disagree with you on that is that Chow will really get into using a lot of CG stuff, and I really don't like that.
Fair enough.
But other than that, yeah, it is one of those movies where you don't know how much you should take it seriously or not, and that's its downfall. But at the same time, you know what? It moved. I liked the fighting, the way it was filmed. You know, even that Keanu got in there and mixed it up. Was not expecting that, and he's good at it.
I didn't know if he would for sure, but I did know that Keanu is in real life a very experienced martial artist.
Yeah.
And is one of the most dedicated physical actors out there working in Hollywood in terms of being Caucasian.
Right.
I guess I don't need to say much more than that. In terms of being Caucasian and in Hollywood, he is one of the best guys out there. He really is. He's very dedicated to it as a craft, and clearly, like, you watch that scene and the way it's filmed, you go, yeah, I can see why he wants to make movies in China.
Yeah.
He can hold his own against these
movies. And that's part of the whole thing with the camera moving all around them as they fight, because it'd be easy. I was like, oh, this is where they put in his stuntman. And you go like, nope, that's him.
In fact, the movie even teases you with it that that's exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say what it is, but no, there's a plot element that makes you think, oh, great, it's going to be, quote, Keanu Reeves fighting, end quote. And then they purposely, right away, get rid of that artifice and go like, oh shit, this actually is Gatterby's butt.
Yeah. But no, that was fun. Even though I had to get up at 7 in the morning to come here to see I didn't regret it.
No, I didn't either. I had fun with it too. And it's well worth it for Keanu Reeves. There are these moments, because he's so deadpan through most
of it.
And then every once in a while, it's just he gets injected with goofy juice right in his face. It's like he saw Chris Klein and Street Dragon and said, that's what I need to do. Just for a couple seconds.
Now, wait, was it Street
time.
Fighter? Was it Legend of Chun-Li?
Street Fighter, Legend of Chun-Li.
Okay.
That was the colon title.
Okay.
But, you know what I mean? It's like,
oh, yeah.
You know, what was it you were saying earlier? You're like,
oh, those two guys are interchangeable. I always said those two guys are interchangeable. This proves it.
I would say he's a little better than that, but still, he's clearly, he's playing it, the scenes he's in, for laughs more than anyone else is playing it.
Yes.
And that's, it's both an advantage to the movie and a disadvantage. Ultimately, I thought there was a better way to play it, because even when he's just being deadpan, the lines they give him are so right out of the script for Mortal Kombat.
Yes, he's
down to even him repeatedly saying, finish him!
Oh, I know. Yeah, he's doing a deadpan camp, and then you got the guy who's his, the color announcer, who's going for just straight up comedy most of the time. And everybody else is dead serious.
Yeah.
So it's a real like, how did Keanu direct this?
Exactly.
What was he telling everybody?
All right. Well, that should probably wrap us up for this evening.
Okay.
We've got a long week in front of us still.
Yes, we do.
And we will have made plenty more chances to sit down and shoot the shit about what we've seen.
And it's still the closing night party.
Yep. That is going to be, like, removed from the hook-ish.
Yes, it'll be here, and the chain will be somewhere over there.
Oh, it probably won't even be here, though, is the good thing, because we'll all be, by that point, like, is there any place else we could go? And traditionally, it always is, so I'm hoping. I don't know, have they said where it is?
I believe it's at the same place, at the Legion Hall.
Is it? Okay, because that's a great location.
Yeah, it's big enough to hold.
Have they
everybody.
Said what the theme is?
I have not heard.
Okay. Because that's always the most interesting thing.
Right.
We had the one year when there was a carnival theme, and everything was deep-fried stuff, weird deep-fried stuff.
Was that last year?
No, that was the year before.
Okay, so was it superheroes that was last year?
Maybe. I wasn't here last year.
Can't remember.
No, it was like apocalypse gun stuff, wasn't it? I remember a picture of a bunch of people on a bus with guns, dressing like post-apocalyptic.
I cannot remember.
But I wasn't here for that last year.
Okay.
There's always the interesting theme, and that was the first time I got to try fried butter when I was there year before last.
Okay.
And the last time, most likely, but still.
You're lucky you survived that.
I know, right? Maybe my heart go.
Fried butter.
My heart literally spoke to me and said, are you sure?
Hey, our scientists did some tests and found that there was a tiny bit of nutritional value in a fried Twinkie. Yeah. So you got to try harder.
They go, well, to be honest, it is probably better that it's not margarine, but other than that, you're still kind of fucked. All right. Well, we'll talk to all you guys later. I'll talk to you later, Martin. And
all right.
Damn it, it's about bedtime, I think.
Oh, it's way past bedtime. And people are letting out of their movie, so it's going to get too loud over here.
Yep. All right, folks. We'll talk to you later.